We are somewhat understaffed today. The rest of us here, Mayor LaBerge and I, sir, our panel is ready to roll. This is a preliminary matter, even quick through on this, John. Does this look familiar to anybody? Becca is reporting that somebody, pinstruck.com, sent her an anonymous voodoo curse. She's wondering if somebody in her class is responsible for it. It turns out it even puts a legal disclaimer that says that voodoo curses are entirely legal in each of the 50 states and District of Columbia. And she apparently received an anonymous one, and as revenge, is allowed to curse some third party, but not the person. So originally cursed her, including a quite graphic photo of a doll that is dying. We should take a look at it if you get a chance. Why don't we start today with our panel? And I understand you guys have taken on certain roles. What I'd love to do is have the panel sort of work through these rules a little bit and make sure we know how filtering software works, at least to the level that we figure we know how the domain name system works. In fact, at certain points, the two actually converge sometimes. And then I want to turn to the legislative proposals that each of us in our respective press conferences put forth and had at times quite sharply critiqued by others as the legislative process unfolded, and ultimately see if as a collective body this class can propose, appropriately amend, and then ratify a proposal to protect children from their parents and children from pursuits online on the internet. So that's sort of the roadmap of what I'd love to do today. And why don't we start with the panel? I just want to find out who's who on the panel. Oh, come on, use the microphone.
Legislator, New York.
A Democrat or Republican?
Independent.
You're independent. Yeah, New York, right? You're probably Bernie Sanders, super hot, or socialist in the House of Representatives. All right, so you're in the public press. And you?
Seth Bassman, public librarian.
I'm Gloria, I'm a parent. I'm Yerusha. I have a site for people with alternative sexual lifestyles.
I see that. You're going to have your hand costume with your name tag. I don't know if you want to sort of hold that up so you can see. Okay, Pam?
And I'm Mike. I'm a pornographer and free speech advocate.
In other words. All right, well, so we're here. We've got pretty much everybody who needs to be taken to the table. Well, I guess the kids don't get a voice, right? That comes through the parent briefcase. The kids get a voice through the pornographers. All right, so how does this start? I suppose it starts with a complaint by the parent, right? That's how our rotisserie hypothetical started. So, Lori, what's on your mind today?
Now that the internet is so widespread and our kids have access to all this information, it's really hard for parents to sort of get a handle on what children are looking at and what they have access to. I think that we really need some legislation to put the control back into the hands of parents to guard against sort of the moral and, you know, harmful content on the internet, immoral, harmful content on the internet that's reaching our children.
Gotcha. So you want to call up your legislator and maybe have the legislator do something about it, right? So what's your plan for the legislator?
I agree mostly with the proposal that we had in the meetings by this representative, Nick Dave. I think he's on the right track that we should put the power in the hands of the parents, and we should require ISPs to provide filtering software to consumers on demand for a nominal cost.
All right, so let's make sure we just highlight and lay out exactly what this proposal is. What has to happen? We're going to write a law. What's it going to do? You can skip the whereas this part, but what is this law going to require?
The law is going to require any ISP to provide, on the request of the consumer, software that allows reasonable screening of materials that are deemed harmful to minors, not indecent materials, which we know that Congress doesn't have the power to legislate, but materials that are harmful to minors, which, at least according to the readings, Congress does have the power to do something about. And I would add, obviously, more clauses, limiting its prejudice or its accessibility by public forum. Limiting its accessibility where it's forbidden, where it's been deemed forbidden by the jurisdiction.
Wait, let's just make sure we understand what that means. I mean, limiting accessible by public forum to a deemed forbidden, what does that mean again?
Well, at least the First Circuit, I was the First Circuit, the Eastern District of Virginia, said that libraries in that jurisdiction under the test set forth the three-prong test of our public forum. And under that, and they're not able to infringe the free speech, they're not allowed to put certain limits on the speech that comes into the library of removal.
And this law would say, yeah, well, the court said that's now federal law as well. It's not just constitutional law, it's covered by a court. And just to be sure I understand you, you're saying, in addition to requiring internet service providers to provide software and screen upon request, we are going to prohibit, as a matter of federal law, certain public forums from installing such software? That's your idea?
Right. Since that's a constitutional basis, we're going to prevent, we're going to write a law to that effect. And we're also going to leave it, this would be a set provision, we're going to leave it to the ISP whether they're going to allow pseudo-public forums or these gray areas, something like a cyber cafe or a university computer lab to use this sort of software until such time as it comes before a court and more final answer on the status of those.
So you index by reference what how the court did and say whatever they said, don't disobey it. But whatever sense I'm clear what they said, we don't know what we're going to require. We just do what you do and see if another court will support them.
I think libraries deserve special recognition by Congress only because it's something. There are cyber cafes in every town in America. There are libraries in every town.
But this is saying that libraries are not public libraries, are not allowed to filter.
Right. We'll take a stand on that, and we'll leave it to whatever party wants to litigate that, to take exception, and hope that it's upheld by a court in the same way that it was in Virginia.
Okay. Is there anybody who wants a clarification of the proposal on the table? Is that not clear, Aaron? What about children's libraries or children's sections in libraries? Presumably, like open by a lot of county public.
Well, I think that if there are computers in a certain part of the library, first you have to define what is a children's part of the library. Is anyone over 18 allowed to use that? If they are, then you're
so defined.
All right, so for purposes of my law, I would say that children's part of the library, at least in my library, it's like this, you have to really be under 18. I don't know why you want to go there if you were over 18.
You don't want to go over 18, didn't you?
So anyway,
parent must be a company, my child.
Yeah. So anyway, if you're under 18, then the library, I think, would be able to restrict that, because if not, it'd be an accessory to providing these materials to the child.
Okay, so John, we'll give you license to just clean up the language to reflect what we think you're saying, and then you can scream it if you get it wrong, but it should be a clear sentence that we have passed unanimously into law, as popular as the Sunny Bono Act. We know that this is what it says, and we like it. Yeah, clarification on what you said.
Yeah, the software that provides reasonable screening against materials that are harmful to minors. Who determines what material is harmful to minors? Is that the people who develop the software, or is that parents?
Is there a law speaking to this issue?
I'm not entirely decided whether we should use self-rating or whether we should have public advocacy groups, public group do the screening and then have public advocacy groups check that.
Right. So we'll have the law be silent on that issue and work it out later or leave it to the courts to decide or something like that. Now, invoking my own time of service on Capitol Hill, not as an elected official, of course, I look at this and I say, all right, yeah, but what's the penalty? Suppose somebody, in open defiance of the government of the United States of America, breaks this law. Does the law provide for exceptions?
I think monetary fines on high streets are going to do the job.
Are these civil fines or criminal fines?
Civil fines.
So it shall be penalties for ISPs who presumably get called up by a parent who says, send me some milk and software, and the ISP says, forget it, or we'll charge you $10. They have civil fines imposed.
Right, and of course, I think they can charge $10, and that's what costs them.
I see, so it's not that they have to, let's just jump up to the top then. It's, large ISP provided software, at a fee commensurate with the cost to the ISP. And we know how simple it is to spread fees from Russell Payne's presentation yesterday. But yes, a fee per user that is not above cost. All right. Is there some agency charged enforcing this? When we say there's a civil fine, usually we have to say it's the Federal Communications Commission that can initiate the complaint, is it the Trade Commission? Is it, the Commerce Department, the Census Bureau?
What makes a difference which one of those can just assign to one to create?
Pick one at random, perhaps, party service?
Well, I'll make that myself a Democrat and create a new.
An agency, yes, the browser agency shall be. So I need to throw it to the Interstate Commerce Commission, seeing as they no longer regulate revenue so much. But I guess you would put it to something like the FCC. Right? There's some administrative agency that has the apparatus, however defined, to investigate complaints of those who are failing to use the law and to demand civil sanctions under the law, and then presumably, like other sanctions that the FCC might impose, those can be appealed to a court for standards of review. We can fit it neatly into the octopus that is the modern administrative state. We've just got to tell which agency gets the first bite of the apple. Okay. Another choice you might imagine making as a legislator is whether to provide for some private right of action. Should somebody, not the agency, be able to sue their ISP for refusing to give them the software? Do they file in small claims court, a la the Trump Facts Act? I don't know your view on that.
I think that would just spawn on a certification. I think this is a more efficient way of doing it.
Gotcha. I will watch that. And are there any penalties on the second prong of your law that prohibits, sort of void where prohibited part of your law? It says, where the Constitution seems to prevent filters from being installed, they shall not be installed. Is there any penalty if somebody installs them where the Constitution says they can't?
Oh, and I suppose that's a different penalty, right? Well, I don't know, maybe just injunctive relief is enough. What usually happens, what happens in that, they order them to cease the action. So.
And they didn't even have the congressional law back in the law. They just have to go to the cases. Okay, so we've taken a relatively simple proposition and appropriately made it to a business tree bill. Another question? Yeah.
Would parents be able to sue the ISP if they decided that a software program provided just wasn't good enough and didn't block as much as they wanted to block?
You're playing the role of trial lawyer. Mm-hmm. Nothing. Just trying to figure out what role you're playing, and you're the trial lawyer looking for another private right of action. So should parents be able to sue the ISP?
No, I don't think they should. We don't want to put too many impositions on the ISPs at this point. As long as they choose one of the reasonable filter softwares that are out there, we'll wait for technology to catch up. I'm also calling for congressional funding, meanwhile, to help with the categorizations. So,
oh, is that part of the bill?
I don't know if you put that in the bill, but I think it's included in the bill.
So there won't be some congressional records. Yeah. Okay. Just these are clarifications on what he means. Yeah. Clarification on what he means? Clarification on what he means.
It goes to think tanks and for both in the technological realm and also.
So the Berkman Center can apply temporarily, right? We've just now appropriated money out of the public fisc. How much?
$10 billion.
That's a bit steep.
I don't know, what's your budget now?
$1 million doesn't even see the light of day in a congressional bill, way too little. $10 million, that's a lot. Somewhere in between. $20 million, that's how much we gave the Freedom Fighters in the late 80s. Piddling amount, $20 million, is enough to just sort of seed a bureaucracy, a sort of new suckling pig in the teat of the government without raising the hackles of common cause, because it's just on the radar. $20 million, probably. Okay. Any other clarification questions on the proposal? Just balloon, just clarify it. Yeah.
Can parents modify the site block on the software?
Absolutely. The parents can add certain words. So, for example, they can add that anything that has sex in it at all. So even sex education sites would be blocked to their children.
So you're starting to spec out the software then. You actually are clarifying a little bit then. It has to be software that provides usable screening of materials harmful to minor, and in addition, the software needs to do X, Y, and Z. And we are now saying X is parents have to be able to tweak what the software does.
I should clarify, they shouldn't have to be able to, but they should be allowed to, should they wish.
That's clarified.
They must make it so the parents can actually do it.
Gotcha. So software that doesn't allow a parent to do this will not qualify as software that the ISP, if that's my parent, can get out under your rule.
Right.
Okay. A clarification question.
So if that's the case, can parents reduce the number of words that the thing blocks on the net? Can they increase the number of words that the thing blocks?
Either.
Clarification question.
Yeah, what about other technologies besides web? What about kind of instant messaging, mass delivered emails, data that goes to wireless devices that sends porn right to your child's on pilot, that sort of thing? Is that just...
I mean, we'll take it one at a time. I think those are all legitimate concerns, but you can only cram so many things into one bill. It has to be limited.
So, all right, we're going to limit this maybe by terms we have to get to the World Wide Web. Right. As we may know from modern day architecture, the World Wide Web is but one set of things, one architecture put on top of the internet that we're worried about. So, when we were talking about newsgroups before, that doesn't really count as World Wide Web unless they are newsgroups viewed through the web. Email wouldn't count unless it was email checked through a web account like Hotmail. When we saw the Carnivore, how there can be some complications getting email the regular way through the simple mail transfer protocol, not part of the web, versus getting it on Hotmail or Yahoo Mail or some other web-based email service. All right, we're just going to tackle one evil at a time here. Other clarification questions? Yeah?
How do you tackle messages that aren't transferred back? Soundtracks or pictures or movies? In a world, I don't think there's any technology to screen out these, but to be with little, is there any ISP can provide such a filtering program?
Well, the ISP, according to the wording of my proposal, only has to provide reasonable screening, and I put in a clause after the reasonable screening that says commensurate with current technologies, and we could try to flesh that out and say, you know, that cost is certain amounts within the budget of the ISP, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, so we can only ask what's realistic with the ISP.
Gotcha. All right, any other clarifications before we get some reactions from some of the panelists here? Okay. Stephen, you're our librarian. What do you think about this?
Well, I must admit that I'm under the shouting for the decimal system. Car catalog. So I'm a bit bewildered by all of this technology. But I'm actually very concerned by the clause concerning or dealing with public libraries because, as a libertarian, I'm sort of a librarian.
A libertarian.
Yes. Well, right.
rather sympathetic to the ACLU, but just thinking of patrons like Lori, who have approached us, concerned about the kind of pornographic material that their children can easily access at our library, I think that we should have the right to really respond to our patrons, our constituents, I guess.
All right, so suppose the legislator calls a congressional hearing on this bill, and you're now one of the star witnesses, and he asks you, are you saying then, sir, that a child would go to the reference desk of your library and say, I'd like some pornographic material, preferably that which is maximally harmful to minors, please? You would use the Dewey Decimal System and go under category 666 and produce such material.
Well, I think the big difference between the internet and the internet access in our library and books, which I'm also familiar with, is that, at least on the law, it seems like there's still at least the possibility of choosing not to obtain certain books in our library. But with the internet, anything goes, and I think that's just a matter of personal judgment. And we should at least within this proposed bill have the right to do that.
The right to do what? To refer children to sites that might be harmful to them?
No. I think that we should have the right to refuse or to block access.
Okay, I thought you were saying you were sort of a libertarian or ACLU. I thought you were coming out saying, no filtering in our library. Now it sounds like that's exactly what you want.
Well, that's sort of a morally on the one hand, but on the other hand, kind of thing. I think when it comes down to it, that's my very hello. Got a lot of parents, like Lori, good, responsible parents who just don't want their children to be able to access to stuff anywhere. Whether it's at home or in the library, which we hope will become the second home for the children.
So the right materials will have a line up on this. All right, well, thank you for your clarifying remarks. Parents, let's hear. You like what came out? You just placed a complaint to your legislator. You hammered this thing out. How does it look to you?
I actually really like what came out. I'm okay with the no filtration software in the library. Because I don't know, my feeling is that it's not such a problem in libraries. If I was going to look at that material, not that I'm saying that I do, but I wouldn't go to the library and do it. I think there's social constraints there that are not the same at home. I think that is that children who are going to libraries are often with parents, and that there is more opportunity to monitor. Whereas at home, you can't, what do you say to your kid, like, you can't go in the computer room and don't, you know, look at it. It's really impossible to monitor them for all hours of the day. So I think that the first problem of the proposal is really good because it puts power back in the parents' hands by giving them this filtration software and then really making them able to tweak it to their own value system and help them, you know, sort of either add or take away material they think is offensive. So I like it.
All right, so you're happy with this. Does it matter that you can already get software that provides a sort of screen of language to being usable? In other words, is this law actually empowering you to do anything at this instant you can't already do?
What's the penalty system for number one?
It seems that if the ISP, upon your request, refuses to provide you that, that's sort of paid to its cost, appropriate software to block stuff, the new agency, the browser agency, civil fines. So far, we have a bit of a constitutional problem with that, but civil fines aren't specified. We should probably fix that and draft and say what the maximum fine shall be.
$10 billion.
I knew you were going to say that. I'm on top of this guy. All right, legislator Beagle, let's say it's a typical law like this, by my reckoning, $100. Maybe $150. Maybe $1,000 if you're feeling like you really want to put some sting into it per occurrence. Something like that. I don't know. It's your bill. All right, so there is that. then if somehow the market were to dry up, the ISP could be in trouble for not making some effort to make that which is available. But now, let's just be clear. I want to take a look. Maybe we should save this now, just in case we do something that anchors the machine. If you could switch over to, yes, we've been away from the news site, but now under tools, this is Internet Explorer 5.0, specially installed for today's class. How many people have looked under Internet options in their browser? Okay, about four of you. Interesting, Devin, unto himself. And now John is seeing where I'm going with things. We have moved to the content tab of Internet options. And there is the content advisor. Ratings help you control the internet, and I can't read the rest of this up here. Content that can be viewed on this computer. So let's click enable. And here are the ratings. It says RSAC I. Click on that category to view the rating levels. So there's language. Level 0. This is a justice slider to specify what users are allowed to see. So level 0 is inoffensive slang. Level 1 is violent expletives. 2 is moderate expletives. And good gravy. 3 is obscene gestures. And 4 is, not that over there, explicit or crude language. And that description is extreme hate speech or crude language, explicit sexual references. I see. So if we slide this all the way to 4, it means that people using the machine can't even see that. But if we slide it to 0, it means that anything that is 1, 2, 3, or 4 is going to be aced out as best the content advisor can do. Let's just see the rest of it. We only have 4 categories. Nudity, none. Revealing attire, partial nudity, frontal nudity, provocative frontal nudity, okay, sex, none. Passionate kissing, clothed sexual touching, non-explicit sexual touching, and explicit sexual activity, and finally, violence. No violence, fighting, killing with blood and gore, wanton and gratuitous violence. Now, if you are a professional content advisor, you know, it's just kind of like that A-B+ line, like the line between killing with blood and gore and wanton and gratuitous violence. It's just, may I use a pun, razor thin. So, okay, so we have the thing. I just clicked on something, Internet Content Rating Association. We clicked more info. So here's the Internet Content Rating Association. This is a unique organization, an independent charity with offices in the USA and Europe, backed by major high-tech companies, including AOL, British Telecom, the usual suspects of network commitments, have come together to create the sort of rating system. All right, now let's just jump back to the advisor panel if we can. So we've made some settings, and now what other tabs do we have here? Approved sites. This is a chance for the parent to say, despite what I've just said, I really want them to see www.cnn.com, even though there is wanton and gratuitous violence and tawdry reporting on this site. Slide bar, I want my kids to see it. Okay, and then under general, this is an important checkbox. Users can see sites that have no rating. This decides whether or not you are confining the user to a so-called kiddie corral, only if the site is explicitly blessed, may the child see it. If it has some rating one way or the other, that's the only way it can come in. It has to be a good rating. Or, if we have that unchecked, which is the default, if no one has managed to rate it, we will assume the worst and not let them see it. Supervisor can type a password to allow users to view certain content. Let's leave that. Let's set a supervisor password. I leave it to you, John, to be our supervisor here. All right, and high security password. All right, and then we have rating systems. And there's a chance to plug in different rating systems to the ID browser. If you click there, you'll see that there is a page. Oops, I'm sorry, we can't go to the page at rsac.org that talks about rating systems. Why? Because it has been rated by a rating system that you do not have to install. So you're not allowed to see the site. So John, let us in. Let's just see it. It's a Microsoft.com site. IDE is going to lock us out of Microsoft.com. Perhaps there's some allotment to this technology here. I see. So we have two choices. There's the Recreational Software Advisory Council, the nonprofit group, based on the work of Stanford professor, who studied the effects of media for nearly 20 years before that. And then StateSurf, the first rating system for the International Conference, a 12-category system for rating content on the web. We just saw a 4-category system. All right, so this is a way to try to plug a different black box into IE, which off the download site comes with its own black box. So now that we have the black box installed, let's just try to jump to CNN.com. Right, I think you have to click OK here, just so it looks OK. I think, yeah, see, if you cancel out this stuff, that's OK. So advanced, now let's say OK, I think. Let's make sure you got a password in there still, yeah. OK. You can type the same password twice. That's the pressure. OK, so now we say OK. And now we say, oops, maybe you got to put in the password to continue. OK, we've now enabled the content advisor. So now let's go to CNN.com. This page does not have a rating, so we can't visit CNN.com. Our children can't visit it because it doesn't have a rating, so we don't know what might be found there. All right, so let's cancel this. Let's try whitehouse.gov. This page does not have a rating. All right, let's try whitehouse.com. Some of you have been surfing. Places are on the approved list of links for this course. This does not have a rating. Does anybody want $5 for the person that can name me a site that has a rating?
Microsoft.com.
Either the rating label on this page is invalid or your settings have been tampered with.
PBS.org.
We're trying to think of the most milquetoast kind of who could make them. Of course, we have plenty of people who make PBS, but it doesn't have a ring. All right. Now, see, with that $5 offer, you're now thinking that somehow I've linked it, so I'm all on the site. It's not true. We just had it installed by AV, I just encountered it today. So, all right. We're having some trouble. It turns out, as a practical matter, it's awfully hard to get sites ready. But what I can tell is it's not a big problem as far as the IE people are concerned because no one uses the system. There are plenty of concerned parents out there. It may be sort of a human factors question. They're not sure how to point and click the internet options and enable the content advisor. Or they just need, when it comes time to put their money where their mouth is, they don't know how to do it. But there is still some gap between what is promised and what is there. Every browser rolls out has this RSAC system and is supposed to be hooked into a database of URLs, links that are either good or bad, or put more accurately in the vernacular of something like PIX, Platform for Internet Content Selection. They will be rated along arbitrary dimensions. And anybody can rate a link. I can set up a server that says what you send to me is a URL, and what I send you back is a set of vocabulary words with numbers next to them, which is my rating along various dimensions of that site. And I can rate it along the dimension of how interesting I find it. You can have a fixed server that just judges sites on the basis of how interesting they are to the person who runs the server, or you can do it on the basis of sex, violence, nudity, and language, or you can do them along dimensions of intolerance. As you see, some of the different software packages we've looked at use different axes along which the judge various sites. There was some hope with PIX that maybe people could self-rate. And along these four relatively common dimensions would go ahead and rate their own pages, both to be a good pornographer and ace out certain people from looking at the stuff, and it's a good advertising vehicle. You all want it, you're doing it. Finalists, you come to the right place. So Mike, you are a pornographer on the panel today. Do you rate your sites?
We have measures to prevent you from getting
getting a Director 18, you have to click a link that says Director 18. And we found that it's not possible to do so without a Director 18.
I don't know if we can trust you.
Well, I mean, what I like to describe it, I'm sympathetic to the legislator, and obviously this is no CEA that we're talking about here, so I'm not so uncomfortable with this, that happens with other things. But one of the problems is the internet is a mass community with content changing daily, and I feel basically like even if such a system were installed, you would have a lot of content which would not be stopped, would not be blocked. You're basically discriminating good corporate pornography in favor of this you know, vast pornography here and there.
You're a good corporate pornography.
You know, like, listen, just like, I forget your name here, I'm a parent of some unknown number of children. That we've got away from our good family values, and that maybe parents should be watching their children themselves instead of installing these government bureaucracies that are only going to hinder my ability to conduct business.
Okay, so just as R.J. Reynolds has no desire to sell cigarettes to people under 18, it's an adult thing to do to smoke a cigarette, and they're happy to sell to adults, but they don't want to see kids smoke, and they're happy to try to provide programs by which vendors of cigarettes are able to be increasingly vigilant about things, so too are you happy to try to draw this line. And maybe for you, if self-rating helps, great. You just worry that not everybody will be as civic-minded as you are.
Well, and I'm also concerned with sort of this big brother mentality that there's a rating panel that tells me what meets a certain criteria. What's blood and gore, and what's gratuitous blood and gore. You know, I have no one like sex. I don't have any blood and gore that I think is acceptable to my children. And so I don't know that, you know, I encourage parents to come to my site and give you the URL if they're interested, and view it perhaps together, perhaps alone, and see for themselves whether or not they think it's appropriate for their children.
All right, so bottom line, you support this law, you're against it, or you're pretty
I have concerns on both sides. Using the example that you just showed me, if you have a setup where you're convinced that everything is rated and you have certain ratings are allowed, you allow everything that's not rated, there's going to be a ton of material not my site, other fly-by-night pornography agencies that aren't going to be rated and you're still going to get to it. On the other hand, you know, for example, there's a lot of literature out there that may not be rated. People post books. I happen to have one. It's called Zeros, Ones, and Other Naughty Bits. And it's a manifesto on free speech. And what if you can't get to that because it's not rated? Your children are missing something that I have to think it's very important for them to understand.
Is that persuading you more? Is it correct?
No, I think that in any of these cases, there's a big interest in that. They might not be able to access some information, but I think that it takes care of the greater evil. And I think that because of that, it's worth it. I think that this is a much more reasonable solution than all the zoning suggestions and in addition to the Communications Decency Act. And I think this is a good compromise.
Rochelle, I'll just give you a chance to get in here. What's your view on this law?
Well, I think this whole filtering technology is really dangerous because while it pretends to be objective and neutral, you can see right now there's only like two acceptable standards. And they impose like certain implicit normative values of nature society. Now let me just tell you a little bit about my site. My site is a community for people who've been marginalized in real space, people who are obstetricists, transvestites, people involved in S&M, as well as people who are just questioning like standard gender roles. So the site of both community and education, not only for our own community, but also outside people to learn about us, to stop discrimination, and they're not. This is a site with this technology becoming widespread. Nobody's going to be able to access the site anymore. Nobody's going to learn about this.
So just be honest. Is what's on your site appropriate for a six-year-old?
Probably not six, but that's
what it's wrong. So if Lori's kids are six, wouldn't it be a better world in which she can not have to look over their shoulder as they surf, but instead can put the software on, and we would hope it would exclude your site. And doesn't stop Lori from knowing. She knows the supervisor's password. In fact, she doesn't have to install the software if she doesn't want. So what's the harm to you?
I think my site is not a good site. I think it's a site for people to talk about the common experiences.
But you can see that it's not appropriate for kids.
Not to their young kids. I don't think it's relevant to them. I don't think they're going to be harmed by seeing it.
Is that your decision to make or hers?
She could make the decision by watching her kids and not. I mean, she uses this technology herself. She doesn't have to be forced to by the state.
But as a matter of public policy, she should not have it that easy. She should have to really work at it. In fact, so far, basically, it's not possible to supervise her kids. She doesn't. An automated tool just somehow should not be allowed.
No, she can use a tool. I'm concerned with the state deciding, basically, how to filter, what labels to use, what to block. And I think it's more long-term perspective, I think, and I think if this starts with a confirmation of this acceptance of this technology in the long term, sites like mine won't ever be accessed by anyone.
So by its very terms, this law does not necessarily offend you. You just worry it's a camel's nose in the tent.
Yes.
Now that's sort of the view we saw with Fahrenheit 451.2, is cyberspace burning? The ACLU's screen about filters. And actually, the ACLU's view here has evolved. It actually provides an interesting evolution of the Communications Decency Act, even before that, the concerns that led Congress to pass it. You have it, the Communications Decency Act, which in essence said, if you put a decent material out on the internet, out of the World Wide Web, you have to make a good faith effort to see to it that kids can't get to it. If you don't make such an effort, you go to jail. Not a civil fine, a criminal fine, maybe imprisonment. That was the Communications Decency Act. The ACLU literally fought this act on constitutional grounds. Now, what were its grounds? It turns out, this is just 30 seconds in a nutshell, so the first amendment law. If material is obscene, which is a term of art, if it is obscene, it doesn't even count as speech. The government has almost complete license, subject perhaps only to the due process clause, not the First Amendment, to criminalize possession of such material, again, with some possible exceptions, but none maybe worth noting here, the transportation of such material, the transmission of such material across state lines, etc., etc., etc. And indeed, there are plenty of federal statutes that do just that. If you are caught with possession of obscene material, you go to jail. Now, it turns out that obscene material has to be pretty bad before it actually qualifies as obscene. We have the Miller standard. And under the Miller standard, it's the sort of thing, I don't know anybody who's recently read the Miller standard, it's something which is devoid of any artistic, literary, cultural, scientific, or educational value, depicting a sexual or excretory function for which the local community would deem it not objectionable and without any of those values, etc., etc. So you actually saw in the pornography industry a bunch of pornographic movies suddenly, mid-movie, having one of the actors jump up and recite Shakespeare and then get back to work. And then you can't say it has absolutely no literary value because Shakespeare runs the part, you know. So very few things qualify as obscene. I don't mean to be a dead horse, and if I were, even that probably would not qualify as obscene under the Miller standard. So, on the other hand, you have regular stuff, regular speech. And if the government goes after regular speech on the basis of content, strict scrutiny applies. The constitutional schoolmark comes in and usually says no. Such a restriction is not permitted. You gotta have good reason and a really narrow law in order to regulate by content speech that doesn't count as obscene. Okay, now we have this middle zone, this weird middle zone of what is loosely called indecent speech. And the best way to understand indecent speech, maybe functionally, is that speech for which it would be unconstitutional to restrict adults' access to it, but for which it is constitutional to restrict kids' access to it. And that is where most, unless it calls porn, That's where most porn falls in the United States jurisprudence. We look at intent powers or something. That is something for which adults have a constitutional right to see it, kids do not, and thus can get a law like the one you saw in New York that says those in the business of selling such magazines to consumers may not sell them to kids. And that was roughly the attempt made by the Communications Decency Act to translate that kind of law into the internet environment. And what made it fail was the idea that there's no way to tell who's a kid and who isn't. So in essence, since there was no easy way to make that good faith effort to determine who's a kid and who's not, we would end up having suppliers of content that would self-censor. In essence, the entire internet would be made into a sandbox. We would be deprived of materials which adults have a constitutional right to view it and kids would not. That was one of the objections to the Communications Decency Act. Yeah, see it.
Might a new level or a new way for global top level living solve all these problems?
Well, I encourage you to move to the next phase of the class and introduce legislative proposals or amendments to suggest exactly that. And indeed, there are three applications currently pending before ICANN to create exactly a .xxx domain. And I do hope we'll get to that because it's, I see you're always thinking of us and always putting out good questions. Which I guess I am, but who could? So, other questions? Yeah, Allison?
What is the justification for even, or even the constitutional justification for including biodiversity in decent speech? And why? I don't know. What is the splintering of rights, I guess, would be the question?
Because the way the sort of strict scrutiny thing works, the government has to come up with a compelling justification for whatever restriction on speech it wants to do, and then show that the law is narrowly tailored to that purpose. And the court accepts as a compelling justification the protection of children, minors, from harm, and further is willing to believe that that harm can come from certain kinds of material, viz. Indecent material. Now, actually, what constitutes indecent material is developed by anybody, by the Federal Communications Commission, as they decide whether Howard Stern gets fined at 9 o'clock in the morning when he does his show. They say, that was indecent of you, Howard. Fine on you. And now we know that whatever Howard did was indecent. Well, they say, no, it isn't. And there's a bunch of, basically, cases from the FCC, subject to judicial review on what is indecent and what isn't, thinking about the fact that, at least by time, children are up at 9 and listening to Howard Stern, and got to keep it clean. But in the middle of the night, maybe it's okay, of course. That's allowed because the government has extra license to regulate the airwaves.
And with regards to the harm, I don't really see, like, even in the CPA case, there's no discussion of what the harm actually is. Like, there's no, you know, psychological evidence. They, I mean, it just seems to be assumed.
Yeah, it's because in past cases, Congress has been able to put in congressional records studies by people who study this stuff and demonstrate, according to various scientific methods, that it can be harmful to kids to look at this stuff. And you can intuit, maybe as a parent, that you don't want your kids to see it and feel they could be traumatized by wanton and gratuitous violence, for example. So long as the sexual exploitatory conscience is depicted during that violence, it may actually hurt the kid. So that's at least kind of the ground rules established by the constitutional debate. Now, the ACLU, as I said, argued against this. And one of the arguments they made was that we agree that it is a compelling congressional aspiration to protect kids from this kind of speech. They did not take issue the way you were thinking of taking issue with Congress's finding there. Instead, they said the law, the CDA's law, the way they want to do it, is not well tailored to the task. And to prove that it wasn't, they pointed out, among other things, that there was third-party filtering software out there. You can just turn on the content advisor. That's how kids get protected. You don't need a criminal scheme about what to put on the net and what you don't need to put on the net. The existence of these filters is proof that the CDA is constitutional. And I believe that argument in large part carried the day and led to most aspects of the CDA, except Section 230, which we studied several weeks ago being struck down. Of course, not long after that, Fahrenheit 451.2 came out and the ACLU decreed that the filters themselves were perhaps the greatest threat to cyberspace. Not because private parties were making decisions, but because this was all a riff of Narosha's claim that the camel's nose was going to get an attack. If we use the power of the government to affirm, subsidize, encourage, create content rating systems and really get them out there, why, then it's only a matter of a one-line law later to say, by the way, you have to use these systems, instead of if a parent wants them, they can have them. That's the ACLU's argument in Parent Pay 4.51.2, or the Rose's argument in defense of her website on the parent. Okay, legislators, you want to add something?
I have a question. You described the Miller test as distinguishing obscenity from indecency, and I know that in COPA, Congress tried to use that same test to distinguish Ginsburg speech from Ginsburg speech, and then they struck it down on the basis that community standards don't exist or are too difficult to define on the part of a webmaster because he doesn't know what the end product or where the end product of the speech is going to be. Do you think if you can define the community standards, or let's say under my plan, for instance, that should be easy to do because the ISP knows exactly who's tapping in from the dial-up number. Is that criteria in itself a problem if you can adequately define the three factors?
There's no easy answer to that question. You can certainly see the argument made by those who want to impose a certain standard that are stuck with, as legislators looking at Supreme Court precedent, the community standard idea saying, wait a minute, if we can get a geographic handle on who was where, that would help us get a sense for, just as if you know you are selling insurance in the state of California, sorry, you got to be aware of California laws about insurance that are particularly hostile to insurance companies. Too bad, you don't sell insurance there, or you do the law. Similarly, then, you can say, to the extent that you can readily identify, not with perfect precision, with some precision, where people are coming from or where they are enrolling their ISP account, that you can expect the community standards in that setting will apply. But to my knowledge, the harmful to minor standard relies less on the sense of community standards than the obscenity test does for Miller. It may still be there as an ingredient, but I haven't yet heard a lot of people saying that may necessarily be fatal to attempt to protect children from that which may be harmful to minors. So, yeah, question?
Yeah. Since I think it seems pretty clear that it's going to be hard for the way in which the filters regulate speech to be judicially reviewable, since nobody's mandating the use of these filters, as parents are using them, what would be the private incentives that would exist to make sure that speech that would otherwise be protectable if the government were regulating it would be protected?
That's a good question. Now, Congress. Yeah, among our panelists, we don't have anybody from one of these content rating companies. Is there anybody who feels up to playing the role of somebody from Cyber Patrol, or NetMan, or RSAC-I? Anybody who wants to take that on? Anyway. Come on, somebody. No, I'm worse than you doing it. Go ahead. Now you're suddenly working for, go for it.
What are you asking? What? In my position?
Oh, you're coming out charging, definitely. His question appeared to be, what's to keep your ratings honest? What if you start just fudging on the ratings? If the government, God forbid, would start rating stuff, then you would know how to challenge it. Right? You would have to, you know, you could sue, say you've misrated me, and you're the government, and that's affecting my speech and my availability, blah, blah, blah. But what incentive do you have as a private party in the ratings to get them right?
Well, I don't know that if I misrate something, or at least you suspect that they have misrate something, and it turns out it's actually bloody gore instead of really bloody gore. I don't know that violent use of rankers when. You know, there, as long as I'm not the only, was I not the only one authorized by source? I would actually hope not, because I believe that exposes me to greater liability than if I'm one of a group of softwares that are authorized by sort of approved by this agency.
And what's the safety in numbers? It means that more.
There's a marketplace for ideas. I mean, because Barnes & Noble doesn't carry an anonymous book, and it's not censorship, because they are not the only out former book, as long as you can go to books a million to buy. My software is my different parents, and the market feels that it's not appropriately grading material, can go to another software.
So does that work for you? If there's competition rating schemes, then you obviously want to rate well, or you'll get a bunch of bad parents coming at you for rating poorly, right?
Right, but only if the parents are, like, have the wherewithal and technology enables them to know that the stuff that, you know, they're not getting stuff that they should be getting, or vice versa.
Well, it turns out it varies by product as to what happens. We already saw in the IE example, a little dialog box pops up and says, we're sorry, you're not allowed to see the site. And if it had been rated and you just weren't permitted to see stuff with that rating, it would say, this is why. It has one, and two is violence. Sorry, no site for you. Now, there are different flavors of software. Some of them just say, sorry, not site not found. There's one. If you go to, let's see, maybe I can give you a URL. Just as an example, this is a function that URL, which is quite long. One of the most controversial categories by cyber control has been for hate sites, not for the four categories we just saw. I think it's probably an accident, i.e. left out the category for hate sites, even though in the explicit language category it was sort of shoehorning some of that in. Cyber control, among its factors, tries to rank sites and promote intolerance and hatred. And they have experts, people that get paid by the hour to sit at terminals, look at sites, and rate them, and come up with stuff. They may be aided by technological tools to look for certain rules and flags in websites and the text and messages that look intolerant. Here's like the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission of the Southern Baptist Convention. Because of the alleged intolerance of their biblical stance of homosexuality as sin, the internet sites of the American Family Association and various other Christian and pro-family organizations have been blocked from public access by cyber control, which provides filtering software to 85% of America's online providers, including America Online, CommonServe, Prodigy, AT&T, Bell, Manhattan, and Scholastic Net. The nation's most popular internet software has restricted access to Christian pro-family internet sites through a parental control feature offered by AOL and other major online providers. So the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation and Unnamed Women's Rights Groups, teachers union, and ministers of superintendent schools protested cyber control. Cyber control said, you're right, these sites are intolerant, and went ahead and listed them, including AFA.net. And they issued a big press release about this, quite unhappy about this happening. And they criticized GLAAD for being hypocrites. Let me just see where that particular sentence is. It's worth finding, if I can find it. Basically, they say that the alliance that requested this is, of course, highly against filtering of sites about gay and lesbian issues, especially to kids, because it's often kids who are having some friction with their parents over sexual identity issues, for which the internet is quite an empowering tool. They can kind of get out of their house, out of their local community, and get some information to which they wouldn't be exposed at their local library from their librarian. And those are exactly the things that many instances of parents want to filter out. So those sites have been fighting not to be filtered, and in the meantime are fighting to filter those sites that are intolerant. In the meantime, if you jump to AFA.net, you'll see that for a while, the press release decrying AFA.net, that a filter was there, and then up in the upper right, click here for the AFA filter, free, 10-day trial. It turns out that there's AFAfilter.com, which will in turn filter out the sites that are filtering them. And this is a filter that's done at the, there's a happy kid, wireless connection. This is a system. This is a system by which they're using the domain name system to affect the filtering. The way the software works, unlike Pix, unlike the browser side filtering, is you actually say that the American Family Association will resolve domain names for you. You send it to CNN.com, and it's up to them to tell you where CNN.com is by numerical address. And they simply don't give you an answer if it's a site to be filtered by the AFA. There's a parallel version of this by the Anti-Defamation League they went, the so-called peak filter, which is really just cyber control software with different branding that is meant, again, to ace out any of the rules that you're talking about.
Yeah, question.
I think like these types of filters represent what really scares me about filtering as a technology. Because people will tend to use a filter which is already aligned with whatever ideology or political belief they already have. So they'll only expose themselves to beliefs they already have. And in a way, as the internet becomes like the space where people interact publicly, it's like there's no way for people to come across ideas or beliefs that they were born into or in. And I think like something like alternative lifestyles is something that if you are never aware of it, you'll filter out and then you'll never be aware of it. And
I couldn't disagree more. This is exactly what makes me comfortable with the internet. AFA has their little filter, and if you're an AFA family, you go and get your filter. And a GLAD can have their filter, and so if you're a GLAD family, you can go with your GLAD filter or cyber control or whatever. And if you just, that's why there is no right to be heard. And I don't, and it, so if I'm saying no, I don't want you to hear, and certainly if I'm saying no, I don't want children to be. I mean, if I don't want my children to be exposed to, right-wing Christians or homosexuals, then yes, that's what I'm going to do, and I'm perfectly fine with that.
But I think as this technology proliferates, it's going to become more and more obscure at what level, and things are being obstructed, and people will not even realize what they're not seeing.
So this is maybe Lessig's vertical portability argument. This is, again, a camel's nose in the tent. It's one thing for the kids to know they're not seeing it because mom is just a little uptight and I'm not allowed to see these sites. It's another to just find, when you try to go to the site, you find your throughput is quite slow. Just like if you're on HarvardNet today and you try to share as well with Napster, you find that your throughput is quite slow. You may then wonder, why is it some sites work so quickly and others don't? Maybe they're using it so. At least that's the lesson.
Won't even know
about
the site because it won't appear in any
searches.
Gotcha. Yeah.
What about software rather than focuses on identifying websites that focuses on identifying web browsers? So you had a component in your web browser that said, I'm an under 18-year-old web browser user, or the parent would plug it into the web browser.
Right.
So anytime it's asking for a website for services, it says it's identifying itself, I'm under 18.
Right.
And then combining that with a law like the CDA, and that way it would be very easy for publishers to know who the under 18 or the self-identifying under 18 customers were.
Right. I'd say that fully 75% of you argued for something along this line in the rotisserie question this week. About three quarters of you said some form of kid ID may be coupled with either parental choice through the filtering or through asking those who supply content on the net to realize and win. So that the safety of the children, they are tagged with a huge icon on them as they go on the net. I'm a kid, to be able to say, since that's a kid, we won't ship certain content your way, just like the guy in New York has to make a decision whether to hand a particular magazine to a kid, so too with the author of the website has to tweak a little button that says, by the way, if somebody marks a kid comes to my site, do or don't offer the following information to them. Yeah.
The problem I have with that sort of thing that's regulated in the site and sending stuff is that you might be able to regulate it in America, but the internet is bigger than America if you've got sites in Holland or Germany or Japan. They're not necessarily, then the market becomes so based on having these 18-year-old things going through.
Yes, yeah.
Wouldn't we run into the statute troopers problem? Because when you think of Lessig's kids on IP, the question that I think of is, how will this be enforced? How can you enforce that, like you were saying, how enforce this law on thousands, millions, billions of websites, and what kind of penalties can you impose if they don't choose for whatever reason, even if it's just a technological backwardness, that
would be fine. Well, now that we're sort of past the midpoint of the course, we have some answers to those questions. We wanted to just kind of be engineers about it. There are ways we could synthesize the law and the text together to try to address this concern. One way would be to keep it all on the client side, to do the kiddie corral. The IE had no trouble blocking CNN.com and certainly wouldn't have had trouble blocking CNN.ch.
right? If it's not rated, don't show it. And then who cares where it is? That information is not going to get to my kid. So at least along the dimension of protecting one's kids, I think the international problem isn't necessarily a problem, unless you're just saying, let's get to the primary kid too much stuff because it's too hard to raise stuff. And on the more traditional legal jurisdiction question, we'll say, well, I don't know. I don't know how many people overseas would feel safe taking a trip to New York if they knew that somehow they were marked as a felon for having refused to make a simple set on their website, a simple step on their web server, making their hardcore porn site not available to somebody carrying the kid ID. I mean, it's again not perfect enforcement, but maybe it would be a start. Scalia's answer to this oral argument in the Communications Decency Act case was, you got to start somewhere. Let us be the leaders here. We'll twist Holland's arm, believing we'll get Holland into a lot, and Holland too, and away we go. And of course, we also look at the network topology of the internet. It turns out the internet is mostly American. In fact, it's mostly San Francisco. Most of the sites are not far from San Francisco. Well. Yeah?
It's so you could just tag the ICQ, the civil penalty for allowing access to these foreign sites once it's been established that the site is in violation of the
Yes, we could certainly do that. And that's again starting to think of our internet cloud diagram. There are several points of vulnerability, from again an engineering standpoint, where you could try to block flow. We saw that happen in a case of a place in Germany, where a prosecutor in the state of Bavaria went after a guy named Felix Song, who was the country manager for Germany in CompuServe. And CompuServe was just allowing Usenet news groups through, the kind of news groups you can get right off of the FAS server here. And those news groups include some pretty amazing stuff. Some stuff, in fact, might even qualify as obscene or otherwise completely unprotected under the First Amendment. And FAS happily passes that stuff along to students here. CompuServe was happily passing some of the stuff along. The very prosecutor went after them. Got a conviction, was ultimately reversed. But you can at least see that had that conviction stuck, CompuServe may have turned off certain groups to their German customers. They made an ACLU-like argument that said, wait a minute, we can't do it. Our technology doesn't allow us to deprive Germans of one thing, but allow the rest of the world something else. But you know, engineers are creative. Ultimately, they might find a way. It's not perfect, but that roughly does the job. Indeed, I remember when I worked at CompuServe in the mid-80s, there was a program called Castle Wolfenstein that featured swastikas on the arms of some of the characters, and many of the online areas that carried software for free, and this was a free program, simply did not carry it because they knew it to be illegal in Germany. And whether out of a sense of fear of prosecution or more, out of a sense of international civic duty, simply did not allow that program in their libraries. So, all right, so maybe what we should do right now is we've got a proposal on the table. And each of you was asked over the weekend to wear a legislator's hat. So I think all of us should put on those hats. We now sit in Congress Assembled. And let's see if we can get a proposal passed. So here is H.R. 100 introduced by legislator. What's your name?
Lior.
Lior. So there's a proposal. Does anybody care to second this? Sorry. All right, so I hear a second. So it is now formally, you see some of the power of the Speaker of the House. It is now formally moved and seconded. It is a live motion. What is acceptable now is to discuss the merits of the motion. Ultimately, we will come to a vote on it, or to amend it in some way, to propose some change, at which point we'll simply vote on the change and see if that change can take the place of whatever was already there. So is everybody who wants to introduce an amendment? Yeah, Lori.
I'm wondering if we can sort of work on a slippery slope argument about how this could possibly sort of further filtration in general and just sort of keep it for its original purpose, which is to get parents control over what's going on in their own home. So I'm wondering if we can limit this to individual users and make sure that corporate entities can't filter you out or something like that.
Yeah.
I'm not exactly sure how to word it, but.
Well, several of you suggested that in existing answers and at the level of, and by the way, there should be some way to prevent this from being vertically portable because I don't want it to be. The way maybe that could get expressed in law would be to have the government participate in some kind of standards and setting process. We'll come up with some uniform standards, not about content, but about the actual means by which a filtering system could work, and then we'll approve certain standards, and those are the ones that will qualify in the act as the things that goes to the parents, and maybe we could embed within those standards something to at least make it difficult to do vertical portability. How to exactly phrase that, I'm not sure. I see that John is working on it. Is that a friendly amendment? Are you just willing to accept that amendment, or are you not?
Yeah, in fact, in the rotisserie question, I put residential in front of this. I don't know if that'll do the job alone.
Yeah. Gotcha. Okay, so we're going to have to vote on that. That's just in. Yeah, Heather?
I'm going to take out at a fee commensurate with the cost of providing that software. I would argue this is something that all users of the ISP should bear, because it is actually maybe the working mother that holds down four jobs that can't pay it, and that also would be unable to monitor their child.
It's working all day to buy the filtering software to monitor the kid while she's not at home.
Right. I mean, I would think, I mean, if we're passing a bill and we're saying that this is something that is a greater good for all of society, so under that same thing, I mean, the ISP is going to increase everybody's bill by, like, I don't know, 5 cents a month or whatever, maybe. I mean, if we're going to pass a law, I would say that the same argument would say that everybody might want to have to pay for it.
And if somebody said, this is a commercial transaction, not a civil right.
Well, I mean, passing a law, which sort of seems to take it out of the commercial transaction.
Gotcha.
Deal.
John, your reaction to this?
I would oppose that amendment because I don't think that impoverished taxpayers who can't afford a computer should be subsidizing the computer owners. I mean, we're using tax money to pay for this stuff, somebody's got to pay for it.
Okay. Somebody want to argue in favor? This is alternate. Is this in favor of her amendment? Yep, go ahead.
Yeah, I think that the ISPs would rate, would rise their charges, so only internet users would pay this, would subsidize this program. And I think that we could have chosen some other ways to regulate this problem, but ask the speakers to tag their speech and then they would bear the cost. I think this method that we're proposing allows them to exercise their right for free speech freely, and so at least they should participate in subsidizing that.
So, wait, you're in favor of Heather's amendment that says it should be free to.
Yeah, you should be subject to everyone who wants such a program.
Gotcha.
The ISP will raise the. Gotcha. Be divided by me.
So, I'm arguing against.
So, let me get this straight. We're worried about the support model. We can't afford to pay $40 for programs. We want to raise our internet fees $1 a month in order to make so that everyone can have it. And also raise internet fees and people who, you know, don't want the software, can barely afford it, or can't afford it at all, won't get internet access. If they can't afford it and the prices go up, if you're really concerned about poor people, I think you're hurting a few more than you might be helping if they can't afford to pay for these people. I mean, you know, I'm concerned that a lot of them may not want this because they trust their kids and you're making them pay for it. And, or maybe you just look in your neighborhood, that's where you're paying up software. And so I think I just don't know if we need to communitize every single thing that we do in society.
Gotcha. Somebody now on the other side of it? Jeremy?
Yeah, I think that's not really true. I think economies of scale, you can get AOL just putting in a little box on their browser that you click it, the parent clicks it on, and it's password protected. And there's so little cost because it goes through on every AOL web browser. So, I mean, there's no hardware that doesn't have to be very much cost at all. If it's spread among the 500 million people AOL have got going, it really wouldn't be that expensive, it'd be like 5 cents.
All right, so I want to bring Heather's amendment to a vote. All those in favor of her amendment, which, as the clerk understands it, is to add the following, is to remove that sentence, correct? It's to delete the highlighted sentence there. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay.
Nay.
God, that's pretty close. All those in favor, raise your hand. All those opposed, raise your hand. The ayes have it, just from the chair, so it goes away. The ayes pretty much have it. Another amendment, Darren?
I like to strike the prohibition on filtering for libraries and stuff.
You just want to get rid of number two.
Yeah.
And you have any time?
Well, I think the cases that we have sort of deal with the problem already for libraries that have existing existing internet access, and I think that prohibition will prevent new libraries from having new access to the internet that they don't have already if they can't filter it. That's not what we're wanting for. They won't bother doing it. So I think it's not really necessary to have.
Gotcha. Anybody want to defend number two? Leor, you want to come over
here? I don't understand what Darren is suggesting, that a library that doesn't have internet access will decide not to have it if they can't filter. I think it'll be up to the townspeople in some democratic fashion, they'll all decide whether to have it or not. And they'll have to comply with the law one way or another.
Well, a lot of people in towns might want internet access if they could filter out more, but now they don't have that option because their library is not prohibited from doing that. So you just took flexibility away from the town.
Anybody on the other side of things? Yeah,
I wouldn't vote for it without that. I mean, I guess I'd be opposed to this whole bill because I think there should be, I don't know, close to filtering, but I certainly would vote for it without the stipulation that a library can't do any more filtering of its content than it's able to do right now.
Gotcha. Anybody on the other side? All right, why don't we bring this amendment to a vote? So the idea is that number two here will simply be deleted. Even visitors to the class may vote. All those in favor of the amendment, please signify so by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay.
Nay.
The favor chair of nays have it, and the number two stays. Yes, Brian?
I just have a point of clarification.
Yes.
In terms of what we have, is there any immunity for the software vendor from civil liability from what they include in their software?
Is there any immunity? So I hope you understand. You're thinking like CDA 230 kind of thing.
Yeah.
Is there some way that if they filter out angelsofmercy.com as a site with wanton and gratuitous violence, and in fact, all it is a site to link up young puppies that are unloved with kids in hospitals that need a companion, no lawsuit shall lie.
Exactly.
So do you want to phrase that as an amendment?
Yes, I would like to phrase that as an amendment, that there is a limitation of civil liability for the software vendors and the ISPs.
For any decision they might make in the course of their ratings.
Yes, and that the sole and the rationale is that the market is the best mechanism for deciding between the systems, and this is hard enough as it is, so to encourage the development of this kind of filtering, sorry, right. The proliferation of options, that we should limit the barriers to entry
right. And
limit liability.
So just to be clear, to clarify this, if, for example, somebody publishes a website that says, here is how to hack cyber control, here's how to disable it on their computer, and cyber control then promptly chooses, as they have done, to list that as a site that has all of the things along every dimension. So if you have any footprint at all, you will not see that site. There would be no civil liability for cyber control's behavior. In fact, if cyber control chose to filter out the sites of their competitors for the bald reason that they don't want to have competition, that would be okay too.
Precisely.
Okay. Anybody want to speak against this? Yeah.
I'm opposed to the amendment because I think it removes all incentive for the people who have the ability to take responsibility for making sure they don't discriminate against certain groups or implement the biases in these systems. And I think that if anything, we should unduly burden the ISPs and the software manufacturers. So we should provide a way out for them. For example, what we could say is if they are informed that somebody finds them biased or engaging in discriminatory practices, if we take actions to correct it, then they'll be
gotcha. Anybody want to speak in favor of this amendment? Anybody know the Jeremy? Jeremy, you have 10 seconds.
If the list of websites is made public, then the things that you're talking about is the amount should really happen and should go back to the market. So,
but who says the list is made public?
If we say it was part of the amendment that the list of scrub sites and the way that they the
Brian, do you have the list of sites what be made public?
this particular amendment.
Gotcha. Now, this is where a problem with the procedure would be kind of a crusty old parliamentarian to come down and talk about amendments to amendments. But basically, we're not going to do that. So he's hostile to that idea. And you can also bet, this is an editorial commentary, that the cyber control of other ratings folks would be rapidly hostile to that idea. Any attempt to discern in bulk the list of sites that they block, to them is simply stealing, if not their intellectual property, that gets into a feist question. But certainly it made their trade secrets. They have people working at $6 an hour long and hard to create that list. The idea they're going to make it public, and then somebody can rip it off in their rating scheme, is an applicant to that. But they're not necessarily a strong lobby, so you may get people to mandate this disclosure. So without the friendly method, we don't have this mandatory disclosure. Is anybody that again wants to speak against Brian's amendment? Yeah, Iris.
I guess I want to agree, Brian, with your premise that market forces will control here and will lead to the proper balance. Because the people who would object, or the people who would, who are most opposed, I think, to this, would be commercial sites that are getting blocked out, or they think they're being unfairly blocked out. And I think it's a different party. It's the actual parents or children. Wait, I just lost my train of thought. Okay, there are two different parties involved. One are the actual users of the rating system, the other are the actual sites who would be concerned with this. And I think the market forces, it would really be the parents who are buying the software, right? So for the market to operate effectively, it would have to be the parents saying, we don't like your rating scheme. But I don't think parents have as great a best interest in, or as great a concern about over-breadth of blocking out as would the actual commercial sites that are getting blocked out. Does that make sense?
Makes sense to Brian, yes. Okay, anybody want to speak on the other end? I've got 6 minutes left, so make it quick, go ahead. You want that?
I would think that actually if you didn't have an amendment like this, that on the other hand, legal forces might just put all these people out of business. I mean, if it was really that easy to sue them, it's a little unclear to me on what basis you would really sue them in the first place, even without this amendment. But presumably, if you could actually sue them, one of either Plaid or AFA will file suit. And similarly for a whole bunch of these other pairs of organizations who have competing ideologies.
Yeah. We're actually going to cover issues exactly like this in some future sessions of this course, one which is called the end of an end. Yes, that's an interesting one. The guy behind you, you had a come on the other side as well? Or you've got the other side. Yeah. Joe?
I'm coming to the market for this argument, and I just wonder if you just eliminated the really nice piece of charts itself, where we only have 20 million. Set aside for these major software, what exactly is the economic benefit to have its competitors go into this market to create open software with no alternative way of earning any revenue when we're doing this software for free?
So this was on your favor of the liability, or
yes, in favor
of the liability. And is there any limit to liability? It's completely, either substantively or my number is complete blank of liability.
Yeah, complete blank of liability, with the rationale being that litigation is very expensive, so let's just cut it off at the corporate door.
Gotcha. All right, so this is point eight. Now we call for a vote. All those in favor of adding point eight, a limited liability, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay.
Nay.
It's a brief nay, but it's not like a problem. All those in favor, raise your hand. Opposed, raise your hand. The nays have it. So the amendment is defeated. All right, I want to just take off that before we come to a final vote on the whole thing, the Pruitt's amendment, if Cedar is willing to bring it, perhaps to strike the entire thing and substitute for it some kind of scheme about .xxx.
That's my
amendment. It needs to be worked out a little bit, huh? Depending on detail, that's probably.
Yeah, destroy this entire amendment and just turn the internet to the cable. Have people subscribe to certain about sex, about violence, whatever.
And how will it be enforced? Is the idea that anybody with a website that has porn on it must locate that site under .xxx, subject to penalty?
Yeah.
So all the current whitehouse.com, whitehouse.com has got to move to whitehouse.xxx or whitehouse.com.xxx, and so does every other porn site. And is there a penalty if you don't so move?
Yeah, I think we should probably still move. But there's reversible filters that we can still use.
And .xxx, any others, or we'll just start with X?
Education.
Education. And so if you are into education, you must move to education.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
But you can have the same domain in two sites.
Gotcha. All right, we're running out of time. So two quick comments there, real quick. Go ahead.
I think in the first amendment, you're restricting where I can speak.
Okay.
And yeah, and I work for HBO, and we're publishing the transcripts from Sex and the City. Would we have to put that under a .xxx or a .sex? I mean, there's pretty racist stuff there.
That would be under a .racist
name. All right, let's take a quick view on the approved amendment. All those in favor of the approved amendment, please signify so much by saying aye.
Aye.
And those opposed say nay.
Nay.
The amendment fails. Okay. Now we are down to the original motion as amended by this body. Does anybody briefly just want to speak against it or for it, one way or the other? Yeah, Christopher.
Yeah, I was wondering if I can actually just introduce a real quick amendment.
No.
A very simple one.
Steve is coming up earlier. Go ahead.
Just to limit, just have this be authorized for 3 or 4 years and then end. So therefore, because technology is changing really rapidly, takes forever to amend things, so we can just have this be effective for 3 or 4 or 5 years.
The classic legislative move to make a bill less bitter, the sunset period. So after 3 or 4 years, it's just going to go away unless we authorize by Congress. Okay with you?
Yeah, that makes sense.
All right, so that's in there as a friendly amendment. Anybody else want to speak for or against this? You guys are ready to leave, but make sure you're ready to vote. It's just like the congressional rush. All right, so all those in favor of this bill, please signify so much by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay.
Nay.
It's so important, right? All those in favor, raise your hand. Those opposed, raise your hand. The nays happen, the bill fails, and we have a do-nothing Congress. Have a wonderful fly-out week. I hope you do something, and we will see you in return for hopefully the final stretch of the course after days on e-commerce that they can find by their name. And then on the Tuesday night of Microsoft case, that will also be the day in which I sort of try to pull together where we've been and give you a roadmap to the final lap of the course. Thanks very much.